This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Mark Lawrence,
Anne Weir,
Alison Milton,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, we'd just been chatting a bit about early days at school, and I don't recall my first day at school, but...
But I certainly remember my first day at school, probably because I waited for a long time. My birthday's in November, and I wasn't able to start school until the start of the school year the following year. So I was really desperate to get there. But I came home, and I told my parents that we had desks and a chair. I had a chair with three legs, and they rang bells. And that, to me, was the most important thing, because, yeah, it was different from anything I'd experienced.
Yeah. I don't remember my first day at school, but unlike you, my birthday is also November, but my school let me start on my birthday, and not only that, if you were that close for all the things like the fancy dress ball, etc., but didn't quite make it to school, you were allowed to take part. So I think I went as a fairy. I'm not sure, but I've still got the photo, and you've never seen such a miserable fairy in your life.
Now, we talk about the 1950s, aren't we? Because I don't remember my first day, but I got some early recollections of school, and that the first school I went to, I remember this was in England, and they did some of the sort of dancing around the maypole. So we had the maypole outside, which the pole and all the ribbons round and things, you're supposed to go in and out of each other as you're going round and round. And they had a wind-up gramophone. So the reason I remember it is because the teacher would get us doing something and then the music would just go slower and lower, and then she'd rush to wind it up a bit more to keep it going so we could carry on.
I'll go back a wee bit further than that. Early days in primary school in the 1940s. I don't remember a great deal about it, but coming back to bells, I do remember that the school had a belfry, a tower out the front of the school, and a bell, and there was a rope in the main foyer that rang the bell, so somebody had to heave on that rope to ring the bell at the appropriate times.
And at the beginning of school, did the bell ring, and you all had to line up and march into the classroom.
Yes, yeah.
You did that
too.
No.
I was all very orderly. Yeah. And we were in an old block of two rooms corridor, and toilets at the end of the corridor, and basins where you were to wash your hands. And I'll never forget the horrible stink of that pink Lifebuoy soap. Ah, awful, which I associate with the school toilets.
I can't remember that, but my school was a reasonably, my first school was a reasonably new school, and so it probably didn't have the same sort of thing. But one thing it did have was a swimming pool. And remembering learning to swim at school, and
that would be an outdoor pool.
Outdoor pool.
Heated, unheated.
Unheated. But probably because I learned to swim in the early infants, I think the infant classes typically got the warmest part of the day to learn to swim. It was the senior pupils that got the first thing in the morning where it was still a bit chilly.
Yeah. Well, we had, in England, I grew up in Leeds, and there were various indoor swimming pools there that you'd need, really. But I remember that, and I don't know what temperature the water would be, because I remember it always seemed incredibly cold. It might be because we were small children, I don't know, but I did. As someone who was overseeing school pools here in New Zealand, they said they worked on the basis if water temperature is 20 degrees centigrade, then it's warm enough to swim. But I do have the feeling it was a fair bit colder than that.
I don't think ours was 20 degrees.
Gosh, we had a pool at school. We were allowed in before school. We weren't supervised. You could swim. Then in class, and on a hot day, if you didn't get two swims through the school day, you felt really shortchanged. Then after school, 3 o'clock, you could all pile in to the pool.
And what about
again.
Supervision then?
No, because if you wanted to swim, you could swim, and you were confident, and
well,
there were people. Much later, I used to sneak out the window at night when I was meant to be in bed, and my friend down the road and I would go down to the school pool and swim in the middle of the night.
You're allowed to swim with boys.
Swim
with boys?
No, not in the no boys in the night. There was just my girlfriend and me. Oh. But during school time,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Boys and girls together.
I don't actually ever remember at school being aware. I mean, there were boys and girls, but I don't remember anything being different if you were a girl or a boy. Just
We'd be in primary school. It was all mixed classes, but you'd interact together. Sometimes girls would rather do in the playground. They'd rather do one sort of game, and boys would do another. Sometimes, but otherwise, you're just all part of the same group.
Except the one thing that did annoy me: girls had to do sewing. Boys did gardening, and I would much rather have been outside gardening than sewing, because our mother taught us to sew and we could sew at home. She showed us all the shortcuts, which was quite different from teachers. It was very...
I left Levin when I was 9, so... those activities, I don't seem to really remember those ones at all. So perhaps they hadn't, perhaps they weren't old enough to even consider doing that. I don't remember a garden at school.
There's some gardening at schools these days with things like these, plant to plate and those
garden
sorts of
plate,
things.
Yeah.
But I don't know how active a lot of the kids are. If there's people from outside going in helping with it, that seems to be fairly dynamic, but if it's left to the school, then they're often so overloaded with normal tasks that it doesn't work.
Yeah. I think for standard 5 and 6 form, 1 and 2, which is intermediate years in town, but for us at a country school, it was all part of the same school, and we got bused into town. The girls were cooking and the boys were and again, whether it was just because we weren't doing it, the grass is always greener on the other side. I think I'd much rather be doing woodwork than cooking. But again, we cooked at home. Learned to cook at home. So I remember Mrs. Quinn, we had to cream butter and sugar.
So how old were you when you were doing it?
That would be 11, 12. And she used to make us beat the butter and sugar till it was so creamed you couldn't hear or feel the slightest bit of sugar
gritty. Yes.
Well, of course, she learned to cook at home and found that wasn't utterly necessary.
But I think even then there were, because I cooked at home as well, but I know there were other kids in the class at intermediate level who didn't have the opportunity to cook at home. So for them, their only exposure to cooking was through the school system. So, perhaps as kids you don't sort of really appreciate the fact that not everyone has the same opportunities as you do outside the school system.
Yeah. As for the tedium, I find if you're doing woodwork, the amount of sanding you're expected to do to get it just the right finish, that could, you know, you do it and they come around, out, keep carrying on, keep on, keep on, needs more. So, but,
No protective equipment either.
No.
I think not. I think you did wear an apron at school for cooking.
So going back to first going to school, do you remember much about that experience?
Well, I found it enjoyable, and I think possibly, you know, having kept a couple of my books from, you know, early reading books, the only reason I probably kept them is because it was a positive experience for me. I don't think I would have bothered keeping them this long if it hadn't been. But no, I loved going to school. I loved reading. I particularly loved arithmetic.
We did the things like the times tables, and at the beginning of the day, by rote, but also the beginning of the day, that the teacher would just sort of say something like 7 fives and point to someone and expect an immediate answer and going through all that. So we were really sort of drilled in it, so it became automatic, which was actually quite useful later. And I don't know if they do that.
I don't think they do. And yes, I agree that's something where you. You sort of, in the back of your mind, that drilling is still sticks for me anyway.
Yeah, it's a bit like in some of the English stuff, there'd be, you know, poems or parts in chunks from Shakespeare or that would be expected to memorise, and that was a useful skill, particularly on late evenings after a lot of drinks. You can just start telling.
My mother in her 90s could still recite long pieces of prose and poetry that she had learned at primary school.
And I think that and just looking at the old reading books, the repetitive nature of it, I think it did. I mean, the word walk could be repeated so many times. You'd walk the way it's spelt. It wouldn't be intuitive to a young child, but once you've read it, sort of 100 times in the course of a morning, you probably know it without even thinking you know it.
Yeah, well, I see it with preschool grandchildren, the number of times they want you to read the same book over and over again, and it's certain words, and it's just familiarising.
Oh, yes, and you can't miss a page.
Yeah.
I've tried.
Yeah.
Did you have, I think, were we all taught with phonics? We used phonics.
Yeah.
So I can remember that list hanging off the blackboard.
When you say phonics.
Cat, bat, hat, bat, sat, rat, bat. And of course you looked at, then you looked at the beginning of the word and you put it together. But then when I was at Teachers College years later, we said, or the message was, that we taught phonics on the pain of death. And so, as teachers, we were being told phonics was out. And I went to my first school, and the infant teacher, the woman who brought in the new entrance, I remember talking to her about it. She said, I just do what works. And it just amazes me that somehow there's this miraculous discovery of phonics. You know, like it has never been before. And that it works.
That's right. There was a different fashion that moved right away from it, and then
that comes inside. Just makes me think, good grief.
I I still remember sounding out a word to help help you spell it. It didn't always work because of the words that sat outside, but it was always a good start, I felt, to sound out a word rather than just the rhyming words, but sound it out.
Yeah. The way we were supposed to be teaching was, if you can't get the word, you look at the picture and you try and think, what does this mean? And then I suppose you make a guess as an X word. How would that possibly stick? Some kids, yes. Lots of kids, absolutely not.
But you are saying there's a sort of thought process that they're taught to go through, and my impression now, a lot of it, there's maybe not so much, and certainly in mathematics, not really learning a series of steps to go through something.
How to get to it.
Yeah.
I
think it's a visual thing as much as, so what you see on the page has to be recognisable.
It's not very useful if it's not a picture book, is
it? No.
Well, I still think that there's a sort of merit in that, some of that rote learning, but also understanding and putting, and perhaps I was lucky, I seem to recall my teachers giving you practical examples of how to do things. So, for example, there are four of us here around the table. There are 12 pieces of cake on a plate. How many pieces can they have each? And so instead of what's 12 divided by 4, you're giving the practical example, and then it's kid can think, oh good, I could get 3 pieces, and then they've got the answer, and that is a sort of that I can recall from my primary school days. Whether I was lucky or had a tick, but that was my memory. It had been given practical examples, and so I did that when I taught as well.
We get sheets of problems, whether either multiplication, addition, long division, all those sorts of things, and you'd work through the whole sheets. But we actually enjoyed that. I don't know, maybe not all kids, but a lot of us thought that was good fun.
But I would have found it fun because it was easy. And so if you're whipping your way through a sheet and getting to the bottom of it faster than everybody else, of course you're going to enjoy that, aren't you?
This is part of it, is that if they identify the steps to go through. So, you've got, here's a simple problem, now here's a sheet of somewhat more complicated problem, and they're not too much of a leap each time, then you can... Yeah. Can do it, but you're progressing without even realising it, because it's just a game.
If you've got 5 buttons, as a group it's 5. If you take 3 to one side and 2 to one side, you've got 3 and you've got 2. Yeah. And if you put them all together again, you've got 5. Yeah. So why do you need cuisinaire sticks?
Now tell me, what are those sticks?
Coloured sticks of different lengths. And if you put this colour and this colour together, they equal this colour.
So one colour was 3 blocks long, and one colour was 2 blocks long, and there was another colour that was 5 blocks long. Mm. They equaled each other. But there are some children who need a concrete example. They can't visualise.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. 3 buttons and 2 buttons make 5 buttons.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they do say that different people learn in different ways, or something you can reinforce by taking different approaches to get to the same thing, which is useful. But then, as you were saying, we'd be sitting in desks, and you'd have sort of rows of desks and so on.
But there was more. The other thing that I have very very great memories of is nature walks. Now we went on nature walks. The teacher took a class of 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds out for a walk around the streets. And that is one of my very great memories, is walking along the street as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, and noticing just there's a little off the white path, the green of the grass, just a little slope down towards someone's house, I noticed a butterfly. And it was a butterfly that I'd never ever seen before. Now, I knew what a monarch butterfly looked like. I knew what a magpie moth looked like, a white cabbage butterfly, gum emperor moths, I think even the big other green one, but this was different. And I... Oh, no, I knew the red and yellow admirals, don't worry. But this was different. It was big. It was quite dark. And, yes, it was a blue moon butterfly. Not commonly seen in New Zealand, but not uncommon. Come from Australia. And so this butterfly, and I was totally intrigued to think that this butterfly had flown from... It was dead, but it was still beautiful. And I was very impressed. But the teacher, I told the teacher that it was not a, it was different, and didn't really quite understand, I think, how different it really was. And you couldn't just look it up on internet and find out. But what I seem to remember was that particular, yeah, it would have been autumn, I think, late autumn, there had been quite a few sightings of blue moon butterflies. So the weather conditions must have been right for these butterflies to have been able to get to New Zealand from Australia. And so for me, that was a primary school memory, but that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't gone out on this nature walk.
Yeah, that must make you think how many just got lost in the oceans.
Well, perhaps city, country is different. But I can remember being incredibly inquisitive, and you could be independently inquisitive out in the dirt, the dust, climbing trees, everything was free, and you could discover things for yourself or had parents who would show you things and explain things and encourage you to be outside doing stuff.
I remember even when I was probably only about 4 or 5, actually, I'm thinking some of the friends that we did things with. We lived near a park, and only one time we just took some biscuits and things and went into the park ourselves to have a picnic on our own, and we got wandering all around, and there was a boating lake there, and we'd go off and do things like that. Without any adults, we wouldn't even... There's no thought that adults should be with us at all.
The same thing, there was an empty section just around the corner from us, and the grass had got long, and so it was a great hiding place. We had little caves, little nests, and
And we didn't wear shoes. It wasn't because we were poor. You know, we get stories now, look at this photograph of somebody with no shoes, and the implication that they were in poverty. No, you didn't wear shoes by choice.
That wouldn't apply in England, but
just who wants to?
I think that's quite a thing for New Zealanders to go, particularly going to England, isn't it? If they tried to go barefoot, they were...
Yeah, well, it just seemed quite straight. I suppose because there's far more population, and there could be, I don't know, probably broken glass or something around. But
I think things are far too careful now.
Oh, they're very careful with a lot of things now.
You don't see kids out.
Oh, even climbing trees and things, you don't see much these days. No, probably you don't see, say, school children playing in the street if both parents are out at work, or they're just... have one parent at home and that parent's not there, then the children would more likely be in after school care or something, rather than a lot of kids in the street and some adults around if anything happened.
How much time do kids spend outdoors now?
Well, probably they're all on tablets and computers.
Well, having just spent time with my grandchildren, they were... particularly my grandson, who is a little older, but 11, but his mother's requirement during school holidays, he was to have 3 hours of physical activity a day.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that the a limit on his maximum time on the computer, because that's what they seem to fight over these days.
Well,
that
was but if you have 3 hours outside activity, then
then he's not doing it. But it does mean he can have 21 hours on the computer.
Yeah, well, with a father, he probably had, my grandson has a shared passion with his father of football, and so,
One memory from primary school were the mats, because in the infants you spent quite a lot of time on the mat, which was at the front of the room under the blackboard, and I can remember how they would get ingrained dirt and stuff, though they were sort of clean. But we do sacking. Did you do sacking? Which was, you'd get a piece of sack, you'd draw out some threads to make a square, and then with wool and a needle you'd sew. And we'd do that on the mat. So I can remember being down on my hands and knees, crouched over my piece of sacking, and the smell from the mats. I can still smell that smell.
I can't remember that, but I do remember, and I think our piece of sacking, I seem to recall, was made into a cushion. That embroidered was actually made into a cushion, whether it became a doll's cushion or something like that, but it wasn't just a piece of decorative square. It became something functional as well.
And plasticine. Did you have plasticine?
Oh,
and
it
was always hard when it was cold.
Yeah, it was plasticine then it moved to Play-Doh now, isn't it?
We put it on the tin tray and on the windowsill to soften and forget it, and it would melt. I can still remember that smell too.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.